Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
It's not unusual to have fun with anyone.
That's all the words I know.
But anyone. Wait, it's not unusual to do you mine. Oh, all the time. I don't know the rest of that song.
That's exactly the words.
How's it going, everybody? Or hello, how are you doing today? My name is Jimmy Wong. You are watching and listening to the Command Zone Podcast.
Hello, I'm Josh Lee Kwai.
Well, that was weird. That was bizarre. That song, though, I love that song. It's not unusual. I love it so much, I know all the words. Today...
What it makes me think of... Was it Attack...
It was Attack from Mars.
From Mars, okay, yeah. I was like...
Because one of his other songs was the song that, spoiler alert, killed all their every single alien from Mars for
spoiler
whatever
alert
reason.
From that movie from 20 years ago.
Yeah. That movie's terrifying, by the way. Today, that has nothing to do with our topic today, but today we are talking about the most underrated cards in Commander. We actually get asked about this all the time. Like, hey, did you guys know about this card? Super underrated. Or like, can you tell us some of your hidden gems? And we've done similar episodes in the past. But today we're going to do more of a general overview, cover a lot of different areas and topics, and talk about cards that are sorceries, enchantments, instants, lands, artifacts, all that good stuff, so that we cover the bases. And then maybe in the future we can go more in depth on it.
But first, we need to talk about our sponsors.
Yeah, we do.
You need to go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone if you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic product singles, anything like playmats, deck boxes, sleeves, all that stuff. If you use the affiliate link when you order it, you're going to be supporting this show and Game Nights, and we very much appreciate it.
That's right. And our other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. And we actually have something really, really special to show off today on the show. It's a brand new product coming out Q1 2018, so sometime soon. These are relic tokens.
So, for those listening, I've got a box here. It's like a booster box, and there are actually like...
This sound is familiar.
Yeah, so there are booster packs with the relic tokens in them. There are a number of tokens. We've got, let me look it up here. We got Angels, Beasts, Cat, Dragon, Drake, Gideon.
Oh yeah, Nicol Bolas as well.
Yeah, Tarmogoyf, Worm, Zombies, Soldiers, a few others. And the tokens are actually, well, let's open one up, Jimmy. Let's open up a pack. So you get three per pack.
Three per pack, and the idea is that this is similar to a booster pack. There are certain ones you can collect. There's also foil versions of each token. Mm-hmm. And they're meant to track stuff like power and toughness as well as loyalty counters. That's why they have Planeswalker ones. So we're going to crack this open and see what we get inside. I want to reveal it. The first token is... Ooh, a foil zombie.
Yeah, so some of the tokens are foils. And if you can see, the tokens are actually made... They're not made out of cardboard. They're like shiny plastic.
Yeah.
And
they're also shaped in a way that they fit. If you look at the token, actually the art, it can fit right on top of a card.
And yeah, we'll if you're watching the YouTube footage. Video right now, you can see it go in front of the sort of... The way the art on a token card is, this is made to fit right on top of it. And then it has these little dials where you can change the power and toughness, or you can even use the dials to maybe denote how many of these, like this is a soldier token, how many soldiers you have.
Yeah, you can even have it be your life total in Commander.
Yeah.
Our next token is a worm token. Oh, from a Sandworm Convergence.
Uh-huh.
And then an insect token. I think this is from Emonket, one of the
It looks like
insects.
It.
Yeah.
Well, zombies, sweet.
Yeah.
So these are going to be out soon, or they could be out now. I'm not sure of the exact date, but keep your eye out for them. They are pretty sweet and a good way to sort of jazz up your battlefield.
Yeah. I could see someone getting this and being like, oh, I have a zombie deck or a goblin deck, and I'm just going to use this as my life total counter for the rest of the game.
Yeah, that's true. It could be a life total counter.
Cool. Well, if you have a Krenko deck, you're going to be cranking this thing all the way to the top.
Krenko, cranking. I like it.
Cranking and Krenko.
All right. And the last way to support the show is directly on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/commandzone, you can contribute directly. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode. And this episode is dedicated to
Will Yaucy. And it's also especially dedicated to Will because he is one of many, many people now that has submitted an audition video to be on an episode of Game Nights. That's a very new exciting development that we've had. If you're a patron of the show, you get to go and submit an audition to be on the show. Very exciting. And actually, you know, we just released a behind the scenes episode for Game Nights as well. And if you've ever wondered what the show is like, what it takes to create, how much Josh here has to slave through just to make it happen, you should definitely check it out because We're also doing a very special giveaway because we love all of you guys. And we actually have a vault of stuff that we haven't given away in the past that we have extras of. And it's time for you lucky patrons and lucky listeners out there.
A lot of people have been asking us about this.
To win stuff like the Aftermath playmats that we gave away to our patrons that were that qualified. And, you know, because it's all game that's related, we have a lot of other stuff, including sleeves, old playmats, deck boxes, and all that stuff, and cards as well. So, oh, we also have special things. We have, like, the notes that we used to take for each turn back before
you
we
still
had,
have that?
Yeah, I still have them all. Wow. So you might get some, like, for instance, you might get Melissa DeToro or the professor's notes from the game that they played.
I didn't know you saved that stuff.
Yeah, I saved all of it.
A lot of people have asked us about the Aftermath playmat because it was sort of a limited time only. We only sold it for that one period of time. We're never going to sell it again, but we do have a few left that we're going to give away. So if you go to the Game Nights behind the scenes video and make a comment, you will be eligible to win maybe a playmat, maybe some of those notes, maybe some other stuff we've got still lying around. And we want to say, if you've already watched the video and already commented, make a new comment because we're only going to be sort of checking the comments from this point forward. Those are the people that are eligible to win from the day that this podcast released.
Yeah, and we'll probably finish this giveaway in a week or so as well, like our other giveaways. So make sure you check out the Game Nights behind the scenes video. The link, of course, in the description box below, or just go to our channel, youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast, and you can find it there.
All right. A lot of housekeeping this episode, but we're trying to give you stuff, so hopefully you don't get too mad about it.
That's my favorite kind of housekeeping.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the most underrated cards in Commander. Jimmy, you've broken these down into different categories.
Yeah, pretty simple. Now, we always talk about underrated cards, but before we even get into it, let's talk about what it exactly means to be underrated. And in general, I think
Soul Ring's underrated, right?
Yeah, right. The cards that don't see as much play, you might consider as underrated because they don't, not as many people rate it high enough to put in their decks. Cards that may be priced lower, so that means that people haven't bought as much of it. It's the demand for it's not as high. And cards that are priced higher only because of exclusivity and not necessarily playability. So there are a lot of older cards out there that are actually really great, but because like the old Legends, for example, or something like old cards that people don't have as much of, they cost more. But that doesn't mean that they're actually more valuable to a Commander player. They may have been slipped under the radar.
Yeah, price doesn't always denote power level, but sometimes it does.
Yeah. There are a lot of obviously other ways to figure out whether a card is underrated or not. But let's just go right to it, and we're going to kick things off by talking about underrated Commanders. We'll talk about creatures in an instant, in a second here. But here are some cards that I think, and maybe you as well, are underrated. So the first is an excellent card called Toshiro Umezawa.
It's his Jitte?
Yeah, I think it is his Jitte.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't even think about that.
So Toshiro Umezawa
everything has changed.
Is a legendary creature, one black for a human samurai, a 2/2. It has Bushido 1. So whenever this creature blocks or becomes blocked, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn. But it says, whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, you may cast target instant card from your graveyard. If that card would be put into a graveyard this turn, exile instead. So whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, Snapcaster Mage something.
An instant immediately, and you can cast it without...
Yeah. It's instant only, so I guess it's more like Torrential Gearhulk something. Now but
you do have to pay the mana cost.
Yes.
Let's be clear about that. But for one, I like this because it's a 3-mana commander, and obviously we know how powerful that is. Also,
it's in black.
It's in black. Black loves doing this.
I mean, dumping. Black doesn't get to do this. Red gets to. Blue gets to. Black doesn't have a whole bunch of, like...
Yeah.
It has Yawgmoth's Will, I guess, but it's not... I mean, Snapcaster and Torrential Gearhulk are the cards you think of, right? Those are not black cards.
Yeah. Or a Baby Jace, or a Kid Jace, sorry. Yeah, I like Toshiro a lot, too, just because... It's tricky. A lot of creatures obviously die. Black wants to put stuff in the graveyard as well. It's one of its natural things it can do very well. And I've never seen a deck with this. I could imagine there are a lot of really interesting ways to abuse this. And hey, like...
Well, I assumed you picked it because you'd seen it in play or something, because I've never seen it in play.
No, I've never seen it in play before, and that's why I'm thinking it's underrated, and just because it hasn't seen that much play. Now, I could be wrong, but I don't think it's a very popular commander because it's a monocolor commander, for one. And you know what? I would go with Shieldred or sort of a more obvious choice if I was going mono black. So.
But this allows you to get value off all your, like, if you cast Murder and then immediately, because that kills something.
Yeah.
And then you immediately use it again, right?
Yeah, another Murder. Yeah. Murder, trigger, murder, 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 murder. Lots of murders.
You can only do it twice because it exiles it. Yeah. Well, Hero's Downfall.
There you go. Yeah. Or you have a Hero's Downfall twice. Into a murder, into a Hero's Downfall. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I like it a lot. Oh, this next one.
I know why you put this one on here.
This next one is a tribute to our dear friend Kenji Egashira. It is Numot the Devastator. Kenji's streaming name, Numot the Nummy, is actually named after this card. It's sort of one of the new original Elder Dragons. I don't know how you would describe these. As in, there was a series of Planar Chaos Dragons that...
Is that where it's from, Planar Chaos?
Yeah, that's where it was originally from. Mm. Which means it's Planar Chaos. It's going to do some things that you may not expect it to. But this one...
I don't know if it's unexpected. It's unwanted.
Okay. It's definitely, yeah. It's 3 in Jeskai, so 3 red, white, and blue, for a 6/6 legendary creature, dragon with flying. And it says, whenever Numot the Devastator deals combat damage to a player, you may pay 2 in the red. If you do, destroy up to 2 target lands. That's a lot of lands that also aren't necessarily tied.
That's the lands. Being destroyed.
Yeah, that's good. But what it's not necessarily tied to the player that you hit with combat damage.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing where you smack Jimmy and then activate and then blow up, you know, Mel's lands instead. That seems kind of... I didn't think about this when I first saw the card. Spoiler alert, if you've seen the new behind-the-scenes video for Game Nights, you probably realize that Kenji is appearing on a future episode that we've already shot, and he plays... I'm spoiling a lot of stuff, but I guess you could probably guess he's playing his namesake, this deck. So
it's actually, I think, his first commander deck he's ever built. He's talked about it on stream a lot. He has an altar of Numot as well.
I mean, he was coming on Game Nights. We were like, well, you have to play the Numot deck.
Yeah.
I mean,
we had other choices. We're like, maybe we can give him this or that. I was like, nah, you're going to play Numot. There's one thing I've learned in Commander recently is that lands, powerful lands, are so underrated in terms of their threat level on the board. Like... If you just have
a... There's always, like, a bunch of good ones.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's up to 2 target lands, so it doesn't even have to be the same person, right? Yeah.
There's always Maze of Ith, Alchemist Refuge. Oh, gosh. You know,
Cabal Coffers.
Temple of the Urborg. False God. Yeah. Much less, like, not even talking about, like, Gaia's crazy Cradle. Stuff. Like, yeah. Gaia's Cradle, Growing Rites of Vehicle Mach. Now there's the Storm the Vault. What's that turn into? The Tolarian Academy.
Oh, yeah, Tolarian Academy.
It's crazy. There's so many. Yeah.
You're almost always, especially because it's a 6-mana commander, you know, you're gonna, it's just a, I see this as a very much a utility commander. You're using this because you want to be able to either control the board a little more, or you know that your meta has problems with, like, really crazy lands, and you want more ways to get rid of lands in your deck.
And you can often team up with somebody, like, just let me hit you one time, I'll blow up that person's lands, and that'll give us a chance to sort of catch up or do whatever. So,
yeah, a lot of politics there.
Pretty
which I like.
Cool commander. I was surprised with how powerful it was and how scary it was. Just sitting in the command zone, you're like, man, I hope he doesn't cast that and then swing because I cannot afford to lose 2 lands. The next one you have on the list here is Varols? The Scar Striped. It's a 1 black-green for a legendary creature, Troll Warrior. It's a 2/2. Each creature card in your graveyard has scavenge. So the scavenge cost is equal to its mana cost. And what scavenge does is you exile the creature card from your graveyard and pay its mana cost. And then you put a number of 1/1 counters equal to that card's power onto target creature. You can only scavenge as a sorcery. And then you can sacrifice another creature to regenerate Varols.
Rolls. Let's call them rolls.
Rolls for the lulls. So this is interesting because it's value, getting value in 2 ways from your creatures. It lets you send them to the graveyard by sacrificing them to regenerate, and then you can also use them once they're there to put counters on your creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a deck with this? Because I never have.
I never have either. That's why these are all on the list, because every time I look at the card, I go, wow, this is sweet. Right, there are tons of ways that black and green can put stuff into the graveyard, so you always have things to scavenge. And then there are ways to abuse +1/+1 counters like crazy in these colors as well.
Yeah, that's true if you have the Corpse Jack Menace or something out, Doubling Season, something like that.
Well, obviously it's a lot more focused on, you know, having creatures on the board, but Varals himself protects himself from board wipes, from most board wipes. And if you wanted to build something that's more Voltron-y, I'm sure you could. But even just having like a 15-15 on the board is sometimes very powerful.
If you can do it quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... You definitely want to, and the reason I like black for these underrated commanders is because black has by far the best ways to double its mana across so many different ways and to make a lot of mana for a pretty cheap cost in general. The next underrated commander is our most expensive commander, I think, in terms of cost outside of Numot himself. It's Iname, Death Aspect, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard about this card before because it's pretty powerful. 4 black legendary creature spirit for a 4/4. legendary creature, sorry. When Iname Death Aspects enters the battlefield, you may search your library for any number of spirit cards and put them into your graveyard. If you do, shuffle your library. I just think the words any number of is pretty good.
Yes.
He's a spirit. Build a spirit deck. Throw them all in the bin for free. I'm sure there's a lot of broken things you can do there.
Yeah, that card seems insane. Another card I've never seen in play, but that is like Entomb times as many as you feel like. That, yeah. The any number is pretty crazy. You could put 30 cards in there.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like kind of nuts, actually. Yeah, and then, if every other card in your deck is stuff that gets stuff out of the bin, which you could do because you're just going to play Iname and then
ramp to Iname, get that.
And literally put every spirit in there. Of course, one Bojuka Bog in your day is kind of ruined. So be careful.
That's why they're underrated, not overpowered. All right. The last category I had in the underrated commanders is just partners.
They're still underrated. I mean, Vile Smasher and Thrasios, not necessarily together, but separately, are not.
Yeah. But even then, I think we should go back at some point, even on the show, and if you're in person and you have these as well, you should go back and take a look at all the partner commanders and look at the combinations and just look at the potentials and the possibilities. Having two cards in the command zone that you can cast, aka two extra cards, one extra card than most everyone else at the table, invaluable.
I think just the ability to have a two drop that you're guaranteed to have is very powerful, because there are games where you just do not want to be the first person hit.
Yeah.
If you're in like... if you're against Craig, for instance, or somebody that plays in a manner that's pretty aggressive, often just having a blocker means they go after somebody else, and now you're kind of out of the woods from that person because they're adhering to the junkyard dog philosophy.
Yeah.
And all you had to do was sort of fade one attack, and you can do that by having something out early. So I really like it. I changed my Tim deck, actually, to Kaidel and Ludovic.
Right, before it was the twins.
It was Riku.
Right? Yeah, Riku.
Yeah, and I just found that Ludovic was card draw for that deck because I can Tim somebody, ping them, and Kaidel taps and untaps for mana, so I can use Kiora's Followers, Fate Stitchers, and stuff to get extra mana. So it just worked very well.
It just gave your deck so much more flexibility than dropping a huge, very expensive Riku and hoping that you're able to somehow use their ability on the next go around.
Yeah, Riku just didn't ever get cast because the deck wasn't set up to take advantage of it. So,
like, if you could ask the question, like, would you rather have just Riku in the command zone or have a card that taps for mana that when you draw cards and a card that's going to draw you that card?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to have card draw and mana ramp instead of my old commander.
Yeah.
I think it made the deck quite a bit better, actually. So, partner commanders. I know it's easy to forget because the new stuff comes out and you're onto the new thing, but I still think there's a ton of unexplored deck building involving the partners.
Totally.
All right. We're done with underrated commanders. We're done.
But not forever.
I'm going to preemptively do this. The next card was technically on the sheet we just threw, but don't worry. I didn't forget it.
By the way, if you can guess the two of the listeners, you're just... yeah, it's pretty easy to guess what we're asking you guys.
All right, so we're on to underrated creatures. Is this one underrated? I feel like I see it a lot.
Maybe I put it here because I think it's misunderstood. I don't know how many times I've played this and used it, and people say, that's not how you use it. I'm like, no, this is definitely how you use
it. And we've had it on game nights, and that was a huge... a million people said, I know exactly what you're going to say. Oh, let me read the card. It's Sidisi, Undead Vizier. It's 3BB for a legendary creature, a zombie Naga. It's a 4/6 with Death Touch. It's not why you play it. It has exploit. When this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature. When Sidisi, Undead Vizier, exploits a creature, you may search your library for a card, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So you Demonic Tutor. It says exploit Demonic Tutor, right?
Yeah.
Here's the part that gets everybody tripped up. All exploit creatures work like this, okay? All of them. You can Google it, or you can just trust me, but either way, we have checked, double and triple and quadruple checked this so that it is correct. The creature with exploit can exploit itself.
Aha.
Unless it says cannot exploit itself, which none of them say that. So Sidisi can be a 5-mana tutor if that's what you need to do. Obviously, you can sacrifice another creature like a token or something smaller that you've already got on the battlefield, but worst case scenario, and honestly, you often do this just because it makes sense at the time.
Yeah, it's a 5-mana tutor.
You play Sidisi, exploit trigger, exploit Sidisi, go Demonic Tutor for your best card, or Cyclonic Rift, or whatever you need at that moment.
Yeah, I just think there are a lot of different ways to abuse this, obviously. There are cards that want to die, obviously, if you're building your deck around this. A lot of people are like, why not just play Tutor, or this one instead, you know, not a creature specifically. It's because you can Flicker Sidisi, you can bounce her, you can recur from the graveyard. There are lots of different ways to recur this, and... you want to be... I mean, look, tutors are the most powerful thing you can do in Magic, in Commander especially, so...
Up there,
yeah. Well, outside of, like, winning the game, obviously.
I mean, I think cheating of mana costs are is probably up there. Anyway,
yeah.
The best stuff usually does both, tutors and puts it into play, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, Marin, Caridor, there's tons of graveyard recursion decks, like you said, Flickering. Just the reusability of a creature on the battlefield is much higher in general than, you know, a sorcery or something. Even though we did just talk about Iname, which in black reuses instants, and I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Less common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're on to a card that, Josh, you sent to me last night, which is actually a card that I have been looking a lot at recently and thinking, like, this is good. It's Temur Sabertooth. It's 2 green-green for a creature cap. That's a 4/3. For 1 and a green, you can pay 1 and a green, and you may return another creature you control to its owner's hand. If you do, Temur Sabertooth gains indestructible until end of turn. Indestructible, not as important here, unless you just want to beat someone in the face for 4 for free. But bouncing creatures in green for 1 and a green.
Yeah, this effect is just very, very powerful, and there are a lot of decks that want to sort of reuse stuff or want to cast spells, and there are a lot of effects that sort of generate either mana when you cast spells or damage to opponents when you cast spells, and being able to bounce and replay, bounce and replay, bounce and replay.
Right.
Temur Sabertooth, because it doesn't require tapping of the creature, it's just how much mana you have, tends to get into those type of loops, and I just notice it being in more and more, you know, combo synergistic stuff that people were talking about. It's always like, oh yeah, and Temur Sabertooth does that. It's not a, you know, we're old dogs now, and I still think of Temur Sabertooth as like a newish card, which is weird because it's old.
It was cons, from like, right?
Or Dragons or something.
Yeah, Fate Reforged, I think.
It's from that block, which is not that new, but at the same time, it's just not the first card that comes to mind. But if you've got, you know, it's like Cloudstone Curio type of deal going on, Erratic Portal type stuff. So it's just a card that comes up very often, I've noticed. I mean, Animar, things like that, really
it's
love
great
it.
Great in Animar.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, a lot of these cards, I think, when I was looking at them through the lens of underrated, also made me think, like, are they really good in a mono-colored deck of that color? Because oftentimes, you're looking for these things that don't really exist in your colors.
Yep.
And Temur Sabertooth being able to bounce like this is really powerful.
Yeah, just even just baseline, like, save somebody board wipes. I save one creature by bouncing into my hand, and the Temur Sabertooth gets indestructible, so it's saved.
Right. If you have more mana, you can save a bunch of things, right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's not even counting all the crazy combo-tastic stuff you can do with it. So, yeah totally. That's a card. Don't forget it exists, because I, not that you do, but I often do, it feels like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they reprinted in Commander, so they want us to.
Oh, remember. It got reprinted. Okay, good. Yeah. So that's why it feels new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's totally. What I'm going with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. The next one is Descendant of Soramaro. It's a 3 and a blue for a creature human wizard. It's a 2/3. It says you pay 1 and a blue. And look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of cards in your hand, then put them back in any order. Oh.
So a little bit of top deck manipulation. Definitely something that a lot of decks like Jaleva wants to do, Narset obviously.
Yep.
But again, you don't need to tap this creature to do it. It's also a 4-mana creature with a 2-mana activated ability. You know, I think there's just a lot of situations where this card is very handy. Especially, I mean, like, it's like a weird, like, for instance, you know how when you use Brainstorm, you want to also have a fetch land to shuffle stuff away?
Yeah.
This is, you could do this as a semi-shuffle ability, right? Like, even if you're looking, like, obviously this gets way worse with less cards in your hand, but I've always tried to find different ways to use a card like Scroll Rack, and I think this is one of those ways that you can at least manipulate the top of your deck a little bit if you're trying to abuse it in some way. Otherwise, it's just mediocre.
Well, I mean, think of how many decks have Sensei's Divining Top.
Right.
90% of the time, what are you doing with Sensei's Divining Top? Rearranging the top 3 cards of your library.
Yeah.
So this can usually do that. So having 2 Sensei's Divining Top is not a bad thing. Even in a deck that's not... I think this would be fine in most blue decks. I mean, it might not be... It might get cut because that's not the theme of your deck if you're Mizzix or something. But at the same time, like, you're always going to get back the value put into this card. You're going to draw a card that you were 4 turns away from drawing.
True.
Or something like that once or twice in a game, which is going to make it worth it. So, again, another card that I haven't seen. But now I'm going to use it against you.
Will you?
Someday. At some point. I don't know what deck it goes in.
Jaleva. For sure, Jaleva.
Well, Jaleva for sure. Narset. Yeah, don't tell Cassius about this card.
I don't know, I'm sure Cassius is going to find a more powerful equivalent.
All right.
Next up is another Kamigawa card. It's Betrayers of Kamigawa this time. It's Patron of the Moon. It's expensive, but powerful. So it's 5 blue-blue for a legendary creature.
Expensive mana-wise.
Yeah.
Okay.
it's like a buck otherwise. It's a 5/4 and it has Moonfolk Offering. I don't think this is going to ever come into play. It's basically you can cast this card as an instant when you sacrifice a Moonfolk and then you pay the difference in mana cost. But the more important thing is it's a 5/4 flyer and it has for an activated cost of 1, put up to 2 land cards from your hand onto the battlefield tapped.
It fast bonds.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Fast bond obviously is good because they come in untapped. But
what's blue good at though?
Not that.
Yeah. Drawing cards though.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly.
So if and blue's good at like sometimes doubling their mana as well. So if you're able to get to 7 mana, drop this out, and then you've just drawn 80 cards, boom, there goes all the lands onto your hand, from your hand onto the table. They are tapped, but still, you are ramping like crazy in the mono blue deck.
Well, and you can do it at instant speed. What's blue good at? Waiting and seeing if it's I can last till my end step without countering something, and then going like, oh, I drop 6 lands on the table for 3 mana.
Yeah, yeah. Or I'm going to draw 5 cards, play 3 lands, untap.
You do that one time. I mean, we've seen like what's the Nissa's, the one that puts 3 lands on the battlefield and you gain 7 life or 6 life or whatever.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Nissa's Renewal.
Renewal, yeah.
That card is backbreaking. It's such a huge jump. If you can ever cast it and not and then untap the next turn,
yeah,
you're so far ahead. You have so much more mana than everybody else, and so this can do that with more flexibility. Mm-hmm. I like it. I've put that into a few decks, especially if there's no green in the deck. Speaking of green, we're next going to talk about lands. Now, this one I do have in quite a few decks.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. It's called Dust Bowl. It's
that's the dust.
That's the dust. Man, it's scary. It sounds like the Sleepy Hollow, the Headless Horseman is riding around Dust Bowl. All right.
It's a little dusty out here for him, though. I don't know if he...
Well, you know, what's he going to do? He doesn't have a face. He's headless. That's he's not going to like cough on the dust.
He's like trying to like... He's like, where's my hair? I can't even push it back.
All right. It's a land. It comes into play untapped. You can tap it to add colorless or diamond mana to your mana pool. Or you can pay 3 and tap it. Sacrifice a land. Doesn't have to be Dust Bowl. You can sacrifice one of your other lands. And then you destroy target non-basic land. I love cards like this. Because it gives me leverage when I maybe wouldn't otherwise have leverage.
Yeah, totally.
You know, there are many moments in games where I don't want somebody to do something to me, and all I need is just a little threat of doing something to them. And a lot of times, I'll Dust Bowl you, and then I'll untap and I'll Dust Bowl you again. Don't do that. You know,
in fact, I'll just Dust Bowl you for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I don't care. Because if you destroy that thing, my chances of winning are down, so I'm just going to make sure you don't win too. Like, you can do stuff like that, and then they have to at least factor it in.
Yeah.
By the way, sometimes when people say things like that to you, you have to still do it and let them Dust Bowl you. Just FYI. Can't capitulate every time, but it's a whole side note. it's kind of like Numat, the Devastator. It's remarkably strong to just pick off 1 or 2 lands. It can totally knock somebody out of the game.
It really sets them back... Rhythm-wise, especially if they've had leveraged a huge advantage off it. So, like, let's say, like, oh, I used Guy's Cradle and did something really explosive but didn't win, and then someone blew up my land. Now everyone's looking at me, and I've lost the most important ramp part of my deck, so what am I supposed to do now? So it's, like, interesting. You really don't want to put yourself in that position as a player. Dust Bowl, even just holding up that threat of activation, very powerful. People like their lands, too. I think it's something people are very precious about in Commander. Except for you using Dust Bowl because you're sacrificing land to do it. But repeatable wasteland-esque abilities is great.
I just like having some way to reach out and hit you back when you do something to me. And Dust Bowl can be it. Even though like you destroyed my artifact or whatever and I can't attack you, but I can still... it won't cost you nothing. It's going to cost you a land or two.
And what else is Dust Bowl doing for the rest of the game? Tapping
for
mana.
Yep.
Good times. All right, another land, and we talk about this quite a bit, actually. It's Winding Canyons. I don't see this played ever for whatever reason.
I have in like a lot of my decks.
I have a lot of my decks,
I think
too.
If it's got 25 or more creatures, maybe 22 or more creatures, this card's in the deck.
Basically, anytime I can replicate a Vedalken Orrery-esque ability, I want to do it.
It's not super cheap, and it's on the reserve list, so we're about to talk about it. You might, if it sounds good to you, you might go to cardkingdom.com/command zone and grab... I don't even... If they have it, like...
Yeah.
Because, yeah...
Card's good. Also,
it's super good.
John Avon also did the art, just FYI. All right, it's a land that can tap for 1 colorless mana. You can also pay 2 and tap it, and until end of turn, you may cast creature spells as though they had flash. So it basically is what Prophet of Kruphix says, but for 2 mana and an activation, and you get to do it on one turn until the end of that turn cycle.
Yeah, it's kind of Alchemist Refuge, although it only allows the creatures to be cast at Flash. So it's like a little bit of Dalkanori, a little bit Prophet of Krufix, a little bit, you know, Yeva.
Yeva.
It's a extremely good card because it gives you that versatility we always talk about. I would put as many Vidalcanori, well, not as many, but I would put up to four or maybe five Vidalcanori like effects in my deck, right?
Really? Yeah. Yeah,
because yeah, I'll put too. Alchemist Refuge, Windy Canyons, Vidalcanori, Leyline of Anticipation. If I can, if I'm in the right colors, all four of those are going in the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless there's not a ton of creatures, then I don't want Windy Canyons because it only does creature cards. That would be the only concession. Mm-hmm. All right. The next one is, oh, you've got it up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's our last land of the group. It's Slayer's Stronghold from Avacyn Restored. Now you can tap this to add colors to your mana pool. You can also tap red and white, so this is for you Boros players out there, and tap the land. Target creature gets +2/+0 and gains vigilance and haste until end of turn. I think both of these keywords, haste, obviously, I think a lot of commander players recognize as being a really powerful keyword, being able to come out of nowhere and beat someone with something, trigger an ability, do whatever. But vigilance is, I think, vastly underrated, almost, I feel like, across every format sometimes, except for like modern and even,
or yeah, like standard modern is not as worth it.
But I mean, even in standard, I think vigilance can make a huge difference because it's the closer you get
depends
to
on
limited,
the matchup, but yeah.
The more it's going to be about combat damage, right? So vigilance is amazing because you can attack and have that still be a blocker at the same time. Not to mention this gives it +2/+0, so it makes it a beater, and it gives it haste. So
haste is really the big game.
Yeah, that's the big game here. And vigilance is just like some nice cherry on top. So,
I mean, think if you're playing a deck and it's so often you want to play a card like, I don't know, like a Tali or something. Uh-huh. But it's that card only does something when it attacks, so you have to get an attack off. Or right. Narset or something like that, where it's like, I have to swing with it.
Right.
And the table's not normally going to be predisposed to letting you do that. So that's why you play Swiftfoot Boots and Lightning Greaves and things like that. Well, this can be another one of those effects. And it's on a land, so it's a little bit safer, despite the talk of Dust Bowl at Newmont earlier. all right. This next one. Ah, man.
Are you ready to tell the world about it?
I've been keeping this one in my back pocket for a while.
When I first read this, I was like, oh, there are other cards that do this. And then I read the second line of text, and I was like, oh, but not this.
Yeah, this card is really good, and I've been putting it into more and more decks. I forget who mentioned it to me. It was probably in a Twitter or maybe a comment like months ago. It's very cheap, too, as far as price. And when I saw it, I was like, why the heck do I not have 20 of these, and I'm not playing it in all my decks? So here you go. It's called Rebuild. It's 2 and a blue. It's an instant.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it's an instant. If it was a sorcery, it would all make sense to me.
Yeah, right.
It says, return all artifacts to their owner's hands. Hmm. So it Hercules recalls, but everybody, yourself included, yes. That alone is really good. That alone right there, I think, is very good and very playable.
It could set so many people back if they're all about ramp.
You know you have it. You can do it on the end step before your turn, so you're the first to redeploy if you did have some artifacts. But this card's even better because it has cycling 2. So you pay 2, discard this card, and then draw a card.
It can replace itself if it's not being useful at instant speed.
The worry with these cards always is, well, what if I have more artifacts and I'm the one and I don't want to play it because I don't want to bounce my own artifacts? Right. Well, then you cycle this card away in that instance. Or, you know, you wait for a better moment, obviously.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, how many starts do you see in Commander? I feel like every single game you see, the Sol Ring, Signet, Basalt Monolith, turn 2, I've got 27 mana. Like,
here comes Ugin.
Yep. You know, you can really set that person back big time because they wasted their first 3 turns putting out rocks and you go, boom.
Yeah, send it all back.
Send it all back. And now you're equal with us or behind because we actually did other things on our first 2 turns.
Yeah, and the card's good potentially even late when everyone's set up their huge engine. They have all of their beaters. Like, it even could be a blowout against someone that's swinging in and has, like, an Akroma's Memorial or something, right? Yep. Like, there's just lots of different ways that this can be used because it's an instant.
Yeah, and again, Swiftfoot Boots, Lightning Greaves, they're about to do the thing, suited up, swing for the win before they do.
Yeah, and there's always the case of, like, I could kill it, but it has Shroud.
Yep.
I could kill it, but it has Hexproof. So this gets around all of that. And I think better than Hercules Recall in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Hercules is a little bit cheaper, but again, it doesn't do everybody's, don't sleep on this card. Definitely grab some of these. I did.
All right. This next instant is it's a red special from me. It's Magma Quake. And I was looking up a lot of cards when I built a deck recently, a Neheb the Eternal deck that's all about burning people out. And cards that did this effect almost always were a sorcery. So Magma Quake is X red red. It deals X damage to each creature without flying and each planeswalker. It's interesting because it's an instant. Almost always this is like a sorcery effect. So there are going to be metas where this will be the only way that you can kill the planeswalker deck once they get going. And this in like Star of Extinction is another example. But for X red red, it's very flexible. It's an instant, and however, it doesn't kill creatures with flying. That's not what red does when it comes to these sort of board wipe effects. But it is still a board wipe, and it's a selective one, so you can also play around it yourself. You can make sure that the right things die for the right amount of mana, and so on. So I just like this card a lot. You rarely see, again, instant when it comes to stuff like this.
It's amazing how just switching a card, switching it to the word instant, immediately makes it I wouldn't play it to totally playable and good.
Yeah.
Just because of the ability to choose when you play it and be, like we said in the last episode, be flexible, play it, not play at sorcery speed. Yeah. Was that last episode? Maybe it was two episodes ago. I'm getting old. I forget. But the next card.
I mean, we say it quite a lot.
Moving on. That's where you say, no, Josh, you're not old. Thanks a lot. All right. Early Harvest is any silent. Nothing. I get nothing.
You get nothing.
Early Harvest is the next card. It's one green for an instant. Target player untaps all basic lands he or she controls. This is a green ritual.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? It obviously better in the monocolor deck. You have more basic lands to untap, but...
But green's playing Cultivate, Kodama's Reach, Explosive Vegetation. It's going and finding Rampant Growths, putting a... You know, if any deck has a lot of basics, even though it's a lot of colors, it's still green because you're just putting them on a battlefield with your cards. Yeah.
It's even better than Dark Ritual. Let's say you have 10 lands, you float 10 mana, you pay three, and then you have seven and then boom, you have another. You can make 17 mana that turn.
Yeah.
So, as long as they're all basic lands, of course. But, you know, even then, I think it's definitely an interesting card. I've never seen it be played again, and it could be a sleeper. Who knows? Next up, Mindbreak Trap. 2 blue-blue. This, for some reason, is more expensive. I'm not sure why. Maybe because of another format, or maybe because of EDH. I'm not entirely sure. It's an instant. It's a trap for 2 blue-blue. It's a trap. If an opponent casts 3 or more spells this turn, you may pay 0 rather than playing Mindbreak Trap's mana cost. So let's say people are going off and they cast 3 spells. Sure, you can do this. However, it just says exile any number of target spells. So we've seen cards like 4 blue-blue end the turn. I think it's Time Stop. Very powerful. This is kind of a similar effect in which, like, if someone's going off, someone's going crazy, someone's about to cast a bunch of stuff, or they're getting into a counter war and you know the wrong person's going to win, but you still want them to use all their resources.
When the stack is crazy and there's a bunch of things on it, because in response to this, I have in response to that. Or a lot of times that happens sort of in response to board wipes and things. Okay, well, I'm going to cast this. Well, I'm going to cast that. And then I'll counter that. And then you just go, boom, all of it.
Yeah, it's also exile, which is crazy. It targets things on the stack, which is very interesting. And blue loves to do this. It can also just be a counterspell, right, for 2 blue-blue. So not bad at all. I like everything about it.
Okay, I got a card design for you.
Okay.
We never do this, but you probably couldn't do it because I don't know how you'd word it, but the card is a blue card probably, and it's, maybe it's red or blue, and it says, take a spell or ability from the stack, remove it from the stack, and put it on top of it.
Whoa, that would be a headache.
But you just take it really from cool. wherever it is, and then you just put it on top.
Yeah,
so now it's the next thing that's going to happen. You could bounce it around a counterspell, right?
Yeah. So that'd be really interesting.
I think it would probably be red, so you could it'd be like sort of counter your counter, but it does it in a weird way.
Yeah.
It dodges it.
I could see Judge just scratching their head and being like, no, no, why did you say reorganize the stack?
Well, it's dead.
Are you crazy?
You already have to, well, yeah. Yeah, well, I didn't enter the Great Designer Search. Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
All right.
That could be an unstable card for sure.
There you go. Oh, yeah. There
an unset. Go. Mark, are you listening?
I assume he is.
Oh, hey, Mark.
Oh, hey. We're big fans. all right. The last instant underrated instant.
I haven't seen this played at all.
I have it in a lot of decks. I've played it a few times. I think it's underrated, but it's overrated how underrated it is.
Interesting.
So here we go.
I like that.
Yeah. It's Arachnogenesis. It's 2 and a green for an instant. It says you create X 1/2 green spider creature tokens with reach. So you create X, all right, where X is the number of creatures attacking you, and then you fog, prevents all combat damage that would be dealt this turn by non-spiders. So if five creatures attack you and they're not spiders, you create 5/1/2 spiders, and then only spiders deal combat damage. So yeah, you can block them if you feel like it for free with your spiders, or you can just let them through and not take any combat damage. That's fine too. This card, I know we really loved it in the Commander 2015 set review, and I did buy quite a few of them and end up putting them in decks.
I have 30 of them now.
And I can't count the number of times I've had this card in my hand and
just doesn't do anything.
It's just not as good as I want it to be. Yeah.
Darn.
You know what I've learned from game nights is that combat itself is pretty rare.
Yeah.
You think combat happens like 20 times a game. In general, it's, and especially big combat, you know, I'm not counting combat where like a 2/2 swings at you because you'd never cast Arachnogenesis in that instance.
Yeah.
As far as number of combats where like 4+ creatures are attacking, very rare.
Yeah.
Very rare. So Arachnogenesis can obviously save you if like Rafik's coming in, or, and I think in certain metas maybe it would be good, but yeah, I still have it in a few, but I took it out. I like Constant Mist so much better because Arachnogenesis, you can fire off. You don't want to fire off in small situations, mm-hmm. but Constant Mist you can, where it's like, I don't want to take 10 damage. All Constant Mist, you know, from these two creatures because I can buy it back.
Right, right.
Yeah, whereas Arachnogenesis, do I want to use it in that instance? No, I'll just take 10, you know, unless it's like I'm at 10.
Yeah, this may just be better for specific metas as well. I mean, I'm sure some people are much more creature and combat based, but we're always doing some tricksy, weird things around the edges, so it may not be as good.
I do think it's good. I just think I thought it was going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think we all did.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting to use it because I have so many copies.
I'm still waiting to use it because it got stuck in my hand and then I cast it, yeah.
All right, next up is another version of Blasphemous Act that I really like. It's Chain Reaction. It's another red spell. 2 red for a sorcery. Chain Reaction deals X damage to each creature where X is the number of creatures on the battlefield. So oftentimes this would just be a straight board wipe.
It's Blasphemous Act-y.
Yeah, it's very Blasphemous Act-y. But instead of reducing a mana cost, it could just be every creature takes 10 damage, 13 damage, 15, you know, whatever. And so it ends up being a board wipe in red for 4 mana, kind of like a Damnation. Pretty good card.
And generally you don't want to wipe the board unless, you know, you're usually in a situation where everyone has got 3 or 4, and that's when you rarely want to wipe the board when there's only 2 creatures out.
Yeah,
so
just deal 2 damage to everything.
Yeah.
Thanks. You could Pyroclasm or whatever instead.
Yeah, I like that card. I need to put that on my potential, because when you're in red, you're like, well, board wipes. Blasphemous Act. Okay, what then? Pyrohemia? Does that count?
Can I blow up everyone's lands and stuff?
Star of Extinction?
Star
but it's
Extinction,
super
yeah.
expensive. Like,
it's like 7 mana or something.
Yeah,
I like
otherwise
Star of
it's like World Fire and crap where it's like, well, yeah, but then everyone's going to hate me.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a much more, I think, fair board wipe, and it's great. I can see it being very effective. While creatures may not be attacking per our Arachnogenesis conversation, they're definitely still chilling on the board and generating value. So.
Yep. And they're, like I said, they're attacking 1 or 2 at a time from time to time, but yeah.
Yeah.
I love this next one. This is a good call. All right, I'll read it. It's Chandra's Ignition. It's 3 red for a sorcery. Target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to each other creature and each opponent. I've been killed by this with Blightsteel before.
Oh, really?
In fact, I can't think of a single time where I've been in Commander anyway. In Cube, it's happened. But in Commander, I can't think of ever getting attacked by Blightsteel and losing that way.
Right. It's some other way they sneak it in.
Yeah, but I've definitely been Chandra's Ignition with it. Because the creature is dealing the damage.
Yep.
So if it has Infect, I'm surprised Craig doesn't play this card.
I think he does, but I don't think red is one of the stronger Infect colors.
It's true. He just doesn't have a lot of decks that have red with Infect. Interesting.
But he definitely does have decks with red as Infect. So.
But also think of these creatures that there are a lot of points in games where a really huge creature hits the table now that usually gets killed or something else happens.
Right.
Or it's a Mazavith just stops it dead in its tracks, or you know, propaganda type whatever, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But this is a way to just be like, if I get a 22/22 creature, boom.
Boom.
That is everyone taking 22 damage to the face. That's not...
Some lands also may have been
this
destroyed.
This is lands getting destroyed.
Oh, okay. I heard it. It was earthier.
Yeah, and this is 22 damage.
Boom.
Yep. I hope somebody's recording those sound effects. You can use those free of charge.
Yeah, just download the audio off.
You don't have to pay any royalties.
Or go ahead and make sure to go to collected.company to view and watch the audio versions of the watch them. But you can download them there too.
To view the audio versions. View the audio versions. You can look at them.
All right, the next up is another interesting board wipe for 4 mana. It's Mutilate, with one of my least favorite arts of all time when it was originally printed in Torment. It looks like your neighbor's mom's hand stuck to her face. Like, it's way too realistic, and
that
it looks like
my neighbor's mom.
It looks like someone you know, right?
Oh,
like,
it looks nasty.
I mean, they've definitely done better versions of it, and you know, like, oh, okay, cool, that's more artsy and stuff. But that version is just like,
that's the original version.
Yeah, that's the original from Torment, and oh, yeah. Everything since then has been much better. But yeah. The card is very simple, though.
It's going to give me nightmares.
Yeah, definitely. 2BB for a sorcery. All creatures get -1/-1 until end of turn for each swamp you control. So this is, again, very good in mono black, obviously, but also gets rid of indestructible creatures. It's similar to everyone's favorite 2BB.
Toxic Deluge,
yeah. But this case, it's swamps specifically. So I do like this card quite a bit. I think it does the job and does what it wants to do very well. In the right decks, of course, always.
Also, you can freak your opponents out with the awesome art.
Oh, God, do not play this version. Oh, there's a foil version of it, though.
Play the foil version.
Yeah, play the foil version.
All right. The next one is Pour Over the Pages. I remember this was a playmat at GP something.
It was, I think...
LA?
Yeah. I remember signing this playmat and being like, this is the perfect playmat to sign.
Yeah.
Because there's some literally a page for you to sign
Yeah, exactly. Some playmats are tough. This one has a spot. Pour Over the Pages, 3BB for a sorcery. Draw 3 cards, untap up to 2 lands, then discard a card. I love cards like this because that untap 2 lands thing you can totally abuse by like having bounce lands, Temple of the False Gods.
Not to mention this card essentially costs
3 mana.
Right.
It's just better than something like Divination because you're drawing 3 and then you discard a card. It doesn't say you have to discard one of the 3 you drew, just a card. So,
and you can untap some sweet lands.
Untap Gaia's Cradle,
hey,
like we were talking about, Sarah's Sanctum, Cabal, something sweet coffers, like that. I dig it.
Just many different things you can untap.
Nykthos. Something with a Market Festival on it. I'm the only one that would do that, but I still think it's cool.
Yeah, I like the card, though. I think it's just a very good draw card for what it is. There's obviously tons of different ways to draw cards in blue, but that one, I think, has not seen much play.
You play it in Mizzix, and then, you know, you actually maybe gain mana or at least break even.
Yeah. Acquire is the next card. It's a sorcery, 3BB. Search target opponent's library for an artifact card and put that card on the battlefield under your control. Then that player shuffles his or her library. Craig, I'm going for you and your Blightsteel. No, Acquire is great, though. I mean, obviously, it's like, oh, look, I want to... Man, I wish I had a Gilded Lotus right now. Now you can.
That's funny. I'll just take yours.
Yeah, the exact same cost that it would be otherwise. Now, there is a chance that you may miss, but... There are a lot of very powerful artifacts in this game. In fact, we've been talking about one, Azor's Gateway. You just go find that out for 5 mana.
Vedalken Orrery in our playgroup, everybody's got one of those.
Yeah, so I like this card a lot. Bribery. Bribery is the other version, but for creatures, same mana cost. Played much more, but I think, honestly, artifacts are the cards that everyone has in their decks, and there's a good chance that if an artifact in someone's deck, that you will be able to use it for yours as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, because at the very least, you can find some kind of mana rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. All right.
It's rampant mono blue.
We're on to enchantments. Here's another one I've been saving for a while, looking for the right spot to talk about it. It's called Hibernation's End.
It's
4 and a green for an enchantment. It has cumulative upkeep of 1. So at the beginning of your upkeep, you put an age counter on this permanent, and then sacrifice it unless you pay its upkeep cost for each age counter on it. So on the first turn, you put an age counter and you pay 1 mana. On the second turn, it's 2 mana. On the third turn, it's 3 mana. So on and so forth. Whenever you pay Hibernation's End's cumulative upkeep, you may search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost equal to the number of age counters on Hibernation's End. Put it onto the battlefield.
Whoa.
If you do shuffle your library. So it's like birthing pod-ish, right? How you're just kind of going up the chain. The first turn it's out, you pay 1, and you go find a 1-drop. The next turn, it's a 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, 5-drop. It's tutoring and putting directly onto the battlefield. So you're paying the mana, ostensibly.
Yeah.
There are a whole bunch of cards, obviously, where the CMC is not equal to, you know...
Oh, right.
You know, you can trick a lot of cards in that. You can't, I don't know, they've been sort of like kept in check by weird things that say, you know, you need additional costs, but this just puts it onto the battlefield for its CMC, so you can do stuff like that. But also just like tutoring the perfect card. Oh, I need a six slime. Boom.
Yeah, you can mess with the counters in some ways too, but even if it's just like five mana, the next turn I'm going to get Deathrite Shaman. It's pretty good. That turn after that, I'm going to get a sweet two drop, then a three drop. Like, even though
if it goes unchecked,
it's as though it's like, hey, it's going to go up to four this time. I'm going to automatically draw a four drop. But however, at a certain point, you do have to stop paying for it. I don't think it's going to go past five very often because there may be other things.
Seven. I think seven's where you stop.
Yeah, there are other things you may want to cast. But if you have really sweet options at one, two, and three, you would definitely want to play a card like this.
Yeah. Tutoring and mana cost. I've seen it in play a few times, and I've...
It's not specific to green creatures, too, which a lot of green cards want you that only have green creatures, so you can find anything with this.
It is a type of card where if it sits there for four turns, you're probably going to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just picking the perfect card, the perfect card, the perfect card, the perfect card. I mean...
All right, this next one is from a very, very quality set. It's Visions.
Oh, yeah. This is a... This is a Gitrog monster card.
Yeah, very interesting card.
Shot through the roof, I think, price-wise, when Gitrog came out.
Yeah, so it's
down a little now from what it was, but
yeah, it's not
this is a Jason Alt pick.
Yep, Squandered Resources. Black and a green for an enchantment that says, sacrifice a land, add to your mana pool one mana of any type the sacrifice land could produce. So obviously, this combos off with a lot of cards like Gitrog Monster. If you have a Crucible of Worlds in here, there's ways to do this. Sacrifice the land, get a mana, play the land again, do it. Sacrifice the land. You could ramp a lot. Also,
there's all these green cards now, and I feel like they're pretty new, where it's like put every land from your graveyard into play type of stuff.
This is a card, too, where it's, say, turn four or five, you have the ability to kill everyone, if only you could cast that Craterhoof Behemoth out of your hand.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it's very risky, obviously, but it's a way for you to double your mana instantly. And it's also an enchantment, so you can just have this on the battlefield at any time.
We always talk about this, how I believe most games of Commander are won by stringing together two or three or four specific spells, and a lot of times you're just waiting to be able to do it all at once.
Yeah.
Squandered Resources allows you to do it in the same turn faster before you would normally be able to. Yeah. It's a very powerful card. Definitely died to it without them using any what you would think, like the... without them using any recursion for the lands. Just like, I'm just using it this turn to create extra mana. Like, I'm putting it out, waiting one turn, and then I'm going to try and win by just making extra mana.
Right.
A similar card in that it gives you extra mana, but it does it in a different way, is Zendikar Resurgent. This is just becoming...
It's slowly
becoming... Is it still underrated?
It's almost... I think it's right at the point now. Because, honestly, I think...
It's almost
partially
a staple.
Because of you.
Maybe. I don't know if I could take credit for it, but...
Hundreds of thousands of people have seen you go off with this card, Josh.
It's a 5 green green for an enchantment. Whenever you tap a land for mana, add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. So
are you pretty good there?
Yeah, so it doubles your mana, sort of Mirari's Wake style.
But the second part is actually better than Mirari's Wake.
Yes, I would 100%, and that's why it costs a little bit more mana than Mirari's Wake too, but I believe this card to be better than Mirari's Wake now most
of the
time.
And one color.
Yeah, it says whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card. And, well, what do we always talk about? What does every deck want? Card draw and mana ramp.
Mm-hmm.
Any card that does both of those things is going to be extremely powerful. Thrasios.
A+.
Does both of those
things,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of the most powerful commanders there is. Because when you have a lot of mana, what do you want? Cards. Why? Because I have a ton of mana. I can cast anything. So the only thing that's going to stop me in a situation where I have a ton of mana is not having enough things to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Zendikar Resurgent solves that problem.
Yeah, and we saw you do this in your Hapatra deck where you just start stringing creature after creature after card after card after card. And the advantage you got in that turn because you were able to double your mana, it was insurmountable.
Yeah, and because everything I drew, I played, drew me more stuff that I then played. It was just almost, you become such a snowball rolling downhill. Those are the turns where you can just sort of win in one turn. Yeah.
Yeah.
That card's really good. Anytime it hits the battlefield, you're just like, can we take care of it? Because we'll probably die when they untap.
Yeah.
Or maybe we're going to die the turn they play it, depending.
True. All right, next up is a card from Urza's Saga, a set known for some of the most powerful cards ever in Magic the Gathering. This is Abundant. 2 green green for an enchantment. It says, if you would draw a card, you may instead choose land or non-land and reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a card of the chosen kind. Put that card into your hand and put all other cards revealed this way on the bottom of your library in any order. So, if at a certain point in your mono green deck you've played enough Cultivates, you're like, I never want to draw land ever again, you're good.
You're good.
You will only draw non-lands from now on. And it's not just if you draw a card and it's the first card of your turn. It's every single time you draw a card. So if you cast something that says draw three cards, you get to choose abundance, I'm pretty sure, three times.
Think about Zendikar Resurgent.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you will almost, especially if your deck is, oh, God, this card combos so well with Zendikar Resurgent.
Yeah, exactly.
What was I thinking? I didn't even realize that.
Back to back just for that. I've seen Craig play this card, and it's very scary if you get to the right point in the game where you're just pure gas. And you're in green, so it's going to be a lot of creatures.
Yeah, so it's cool. I mean, I like it a lot in the fact that you can just be like, I need a land this turn. Like, because there have been so many times where I'm like, oh, if I draw a land this turn, then maybe we'll do X, Y, and Z. But like, you draw a creature or non-land, you're like, nah, it's fine. I'll try and do something else. But
you can just control it.
Yeah, being able to say, yeah, that's very powerful in this game.
Oh, this next card. This is a really good pick. And this is another one where I feel like...
I think it's going to bust into
it was overrated, and now it's down to underrated. Like, I feel like when it first came out, we thought it was going to do huge things, and now it's been out for a little while. I've seen it in play a few times, and it hasn't done those things, and now people are starting to think that it's not as good, but it's still awesome, okay? Mirage Mirror, 3 mana for an artifact. You pay 2, and Mirage Mirror becomes a copy of target artifact, creature, enchantment, or land until end of turn.
Until end of turn, instant speed, do it anytime you want. It can become a land to dodge a board wipe, too. Weird stuff like that. Yep. Like, it can become a land.
Yeah.
It's a mirror. How does a mirror become a land?
It reflects the land.
That's my brain exploding.
It's a big mirror.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can understand if it, like, captured a fraction of the land's ability. You know, it's like an uncard. It's like, add 1/4 of a mana to your mana pool. But it becomes the entire land. This thing becomes Gaia's Cradle just like that. Like, what? Give me a break. The ability to clone other stuff, especially when it's as flexible as this, is obviously very powerful. And this card, I think, is only going to go up over time.
I also love the way this card plays, which is that it's so situationally dependent upon what's happening in the game that every single time you play it, your options are so different than when you've played it in the past. And you can suddenly see combos and synergies because you can copy other people's things in the moment that wouldn't have been possible for you to sort of predict or plan for really before the game started, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it creates very interesting situations, and diversity of play with the card is very, very good. So I think it's just a fun card overall because... it's the type of card you see someone's eyes light up like, oh, I just realized I can do this.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You see the moment of the epiphany happening in the light bulb going like, on.
Ding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, I copy this, and then I play that. And it's like, you know, by using one of your cards and my cards, and then on your turn, I copy something different. And
I'm pretty sure you can also stack the copies so they can become something, and then you can activate the ability and then become something else, right? I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
Yeah, in certain situations, you could do it for sure. It's kind of like Scion of the Ur-Dragon.
You could turn it into a mana rock, like automatically gain a mana if it's a Gilded Lotus, and then
tap it, and
do something else. You
know? And then turn it into an enchantment because you don't care if it's tapped.
Yeah, exactly.
You could probably do that. Yeah.
Not to mention the ability that to have it reset is super important. Like Vesuvian Shapeshifter is very good as a clone because of that. Most of the times you play a clone, it's one thing for the rest of the game. How many times have I played Phyrexian Metamorph being like, oh man, I wish I could replay that right now.
Yeah, I wish I could bounce it in my hand because I really want this new thing that came out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, sure.
Great card. Next up is...
oh, this is combo-tastic card.
Yeah, Altar of Dementia. It originally printed in Conspiracy. 2-drop artifact. Sacrifice a creature... oh, no, sorry. It was originally in Tempest. Sacrifice a creature. Target player puts a number of cards equal to the sacrificed creature's power from the top of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So it's a 2-drop sacrifice outlet, and it can just... crazy turbo mill people too.
I mean,
this can just end games sometimes.
Yeah, we've seen these free sacrifice cards are just very, very powerful in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely died to it before getting milled out. I believe I've actually lost to it by the player milling themselves out with Laboratory Maniac too. We always say this, and it's very true. You could borderline play any card that just said sacrifice a creature for no cost.
Yeah.
Just that ability alone has so much utility from saving your stuff from getting stolen or somebody getting value off of it. Again, it's way better, obviously, if it does something. But yeah, Altered Dimensions. Just there's a lot of decks where I consider putting it in just because, well, I'm going to have a lot of creatures on the board at some point. It's a token deck or whatever. And
I want sac outlets. Imagine if you had this in your Alenda deck, right?
Yeah. I think I thought about it for a long time.
Because, right, if all those 1919s or 2020s or whatever all get set, that's just a person's out of the game. You just milled them out.
Yep. Okay. The next one is, yeah, you're right. I don't see this one very much. And it should be on the list with two other cards, which I'll mention in a second. So it's Perilous Vault. It's 4 mana for an artifact. You can pay 5 and tap it to exile Perilous Vault and then exile all non-land permanents.
Sounds like another card that does this, minus a couple of lines of text.
Yeah, so
it's Oblivion Stone.
Oblivion Stone is very similar, and Nivinyril's Disc is sort of similar. And particularly good in red and black, who are bad at dealing with certain permanent types.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's 3 cards where you could potentially at least get rid of enchantments if you really, really need to.
Yeah.
Black has to worry about artifacts as well. Josh Kim likes to play this card, and every time he plays it, I'm like, why don't I see that more? That card's really good. Yeah. It exiles.
And it's way cheaper than buying an Oblivion Stone. This thing. Obviously, Oblivion Stone is better for a number of different reasons, but Perilous Vault, pretty powerful.
Yeah, I like this card.
Yeah.
If you want those other two, you probably want this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The last artifact I put down here is Felwar Stone. It's just a 2-drop artifact. You can tap it to add to your mana pool 1 mana of any color that a land and opponent controls could produce. So most times you're going to be tapped for anything. But it's a 2-drop mana rock that doesn't come into play tapped. It color fixes you.
Every deck.
Just in general. It's just a great mana rock.
Every deck. Every deck could play Felwar Stone, basically. Yeah. Maybe not green decks because they can Rampant Growth instead. But
pretty good.
Yeah, because you got your Signet. And then what else? And I think it's iffy. Felwar Stone could be better than Signet in a lot of cases. Especially if your playgroup is usually 4 players.
Yeah.
Because if 4 players is what's generally happening, then Felwar Stone is almost always going to tap for, you know, multiple colors of your deck, right? Like, what would have to be the chances of a game happening where the other 3 players, nobody was in any of your colors? I mean, it was almost impossible.
Pretty low, yeah. Unless everyone's playing monocolor decks or whatever.
Yeah, true.
Then it just becomes like, a, you know, taps for colorless mana or whatever.
But then if you're playing monocolor deck, I even have monocolored, like mono red or mono black or mono white would probably play Felwar Stone, just 2 mana rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not any worse than, you know, I mean, Thought Vessel and Mindstone obviously do other things, but the main purpose of those cards in monocolor decks, you know, that aren't green is to just ramp you early.
Yeah.
I dig it. All right. Well, this, if you guessed it, did you guess it?
What the two of the listeners
question would be?
What do you think are some underrated cards that we didn't mention? Or are we wrong? Are some cards that we mentioned you've seen played all the time? I'd love to know because honestly, I haven't seen almost all of these cards played in a very, very long time, unless I'm the one playing them or Josh pretty much. So let us know. We didn't include Planeswalkers this time. I don't think there are many enough underrated Planeswalkers, right? They're just bad. Planeswalkers definitely don't have that underrated scale because of the card volume. It's just not there yet.
And they're planeswalkers, so when they hit the table, people notice them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to think of what I would even put as an underrated planeswalker.
You might say like one of the Chandras is underrated because it doesn't see as much play as the other ones, right?
All kind of bad, so.
Yeah, so. some
Flamecaller maybe is the one, but it's 6 mana.
Yeah, Flamecaller
is the 6 mana, draw card one. I always forget.
There are a lot, but there also aren't that many. So we didn't include Planeswalkers this time around. If you think you're wrong, let us know as well. Leave a comment in the comment section below the YouTube video, tweet at us, or send us an email at commandzonecast@gmail.com. Before we get out of here, though, wanted to let you know, again, this show brought to you by cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's the affiliate link. Go ahead and use it. A lot of these cards are going to be on that website right now, and they'll get it to you with super fast shipping. That is what Card Kingdom is known for, as well as great quality grading on their card stock.
If you were going to advise the listeners of all the cards we talked about today, you know, pick up this card, what would it be? Oh, wait, let me get the other sheet.
Let's see here. I think I would advise people to pick up Zendikar Resurgence and Mirage Mirrors. Probably Mirage Mirror above everything else. And definitely Mirage Mirror.
I'm going with Rebuild.
Oh, yeah. It's good.
All right. Our other sponsor is Ultra Pro. If you have not, if you missed it earlier somehow, they've got these new tokens. They're called Relic Tokens.
Really cool.
See it right here. These are sweet. So. We're going to show you a little video right here about how they go on top of the card, and they have these cool little wheels where you can change the numbers on them. Like you said, you can use them as a life counter or maybe use them to count exactly how many. You know, a lot of times we put dice on top of the goblin. Like, I've got 7 goblins. I'm going to put a 7. Well, this one could do it by itself. Or you could denote the power and toughness with the numbers if the power and toughness is changing with, you know, I don't know, Cathar's Crusade or Crater Hoof Behemoth or one of those.
Well, there's a... there's a Tarmogoyf one, so that would help out a lot. You can just choose, okay, this right now is a 5/6 or whatever.
That's
so.
True. That's true. Don't play Tarmogoyf in Commander, though.
Please do not.
Yep, check those out. Ultra Pro always doing cool new stuff. All right, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. They keep falling back on the table. Do you have something cool?
Ultra Pro's Relic Tokens. It's the Eternal Collection.
I feel like I had something. Let me think about it.
I am very excited to go see Black Panther this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Is that this weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
release date or from
Something tells me, and all the reviews that I've been filtering in say it, that this is by far one of the best superhero movies of all time. It doesn't play like a superhero movie. The director also did Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Fruitvale was so good.
And Michael B. Jordan's one of my favorite actors of all time. So I'm very, very excited to see that movie. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's one of those movies that I'm happy to get excited and hyped for.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look cool. I'll probably go see it. I used to work for Disney and Marvel, so I get less excited.
Well, this one's one
I've just seen how the sausage is made too much. So.
It's true. But this one I think you can legitimately get more excited about.
So. Definitely, we're starting to hit the point. Actually, this might be the first Marvel or Disney movie that's coming out where I didn't see any of it. I didn't see anything.
Oh, cool.
I know nothing about it from the inside.
Yeah, you'd be a real movie viewer again.
So, yeah, feels good. Maybe I will go.
Yeah.
Finally, yeah, feel like a regular civilian. It's great.
Welcome.
It is hard to watch movies when you know a lot about them. So
yeah, it's hard to watch movies for me too.
It kind of ruins it for you. Yeah, it makes
you
it
look
less
past
fun.
The magic all the time.
Yeah, so you want to suspend the disbelief. It's just so this is a good opportunity. So yeah. I will probably go see it. All right. Oh man, we threw away our papers. I don't even know what I'm supposed to talk about. Oh yeah, our sister podcast.
That's right,
the Masters of Modern. There was a Modern Pro Tour at the time you're listening to this fairly recently.
Yep,
it was pretty insane. Did you see the Hollowed One deck?
Yeah, Ken Yukihiro played it. It was awesome. I think it was Ken.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sweet. I love rogue decks and decks that come out of nowhere that nobody expected.
And it made the top eight, which was even better. Oh my gosh.
I'm sure the boys, Alex and Ben over at the Masters of Modern, are going crazy about that stuff. If you want to hear the inside scoop about all things modern, then you can find them on Twitter at the MMcast or right next to us at collected.company.
That's right. And our editor for the show is Terry Robertson and Craig Blanchett, who's probably editing this podcast right now and listening to my voice. Hi, Craig. Thanks for editing the show. Make sure you, of course, check out our video versions of the podcast at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. And big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for doing the living card animations, including this awesome one behind us, as well as the stuff you see on game nights and our other podcast episodes. So again, find Jeffrey online at
Living Cards MTG.
I almost forgot for a second. I've said
You've
it like 100
200 times.
Times.
Almost,
oh my
yeah.
Goodness gracious. And go to youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. All right, that wraps up our most underrated cards episode. We hope to be doing more of these in the future. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.